Thursday Night Tailgate, where the spotlight is always on the positive. Tune in Thursday night from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time to hear your favorite NFL legends, players, and coaches sharing their stories. Now back to Chris and Bob.
I wouldn't joke about anything else that happened to you tonight.
And now back and making his fourth appearance with us is Ross Greenberg. Ross spent 33 years at HBO. He served as vice president and executive producer of HBO Sports from 1985 to 1990, senior vice president and executive producer from 1990 to 2000, and the president of HBO Sports from 2000 to 2011. After that, he left and created Ross Greenberg Productions. And since he has made some of the best sports documentaries of this or really any other time, you know, if you've seen the All Access shows on Showtime, he did those. How about the hockey series, the road to, you know, the Winter Classic or the Stanley Cup? He did those. How about a couple of our favorites, David Ortiz in the Moment and the Jack Nicklaus videos that he's done for the USGA? Led those. He's won over 100 major television awards, including 56 sports Emmys, 21 Cable Ace Awards, 12 Gold Eagle Awards, plus 5 International Monitor Awards and 8 Peabodys as well. And we are very honored he is back with us again tonight here on Thursday Night Tailgate. Hey, Ross, Chris and Bob here. Happy New Year. Thanks for coming back on the show.
I still don't know what a Gold Eagle Award is, by the way. They just used to show up in my office. I don't even remember ever trying to get a nomination, but whatever.
But thank you got some of those, which is nice.
I don't know. My wife may have made me get rid of them when we moved, so I don't know if I still have them. But I've got all the Emmys, though, I promise.
No doubt. Good for you. So, Ross, it's been a little bit since we got to have you as part of the show. Catch us up on 2019 and maybe what's on tap for you in 2020.
Well, 2019, we had a real successful quest for the Stanley Cup, and I also obviously am right in the middle of doing Road to the Winter Classic right now. Our third and final show will air this Monday night on NBCSN, and it's been a really enjoyable trip with Nashville and, of course, with Dallas. And we had a real successful day of shooting yesterday, and we're busy editing and putting those all together. So it's been a good 2019, doing a lot of work with Showtime as well. And now coming up, I have some real exciting stuff going with Showtime, which I can't really announce because they haven't announced it yet, a 5-show documentary series with them. And then another documentary I'm looking to do with ESPN, and we'll do Quest this spring, Quest for the Stanley Cup with ESPN Plus and the NHL. So they've been great to me, and you know Steve Mayer and his crew have just been unbelievable, and we're churning them out.
So Ross, when I think about all of the great, and you mentioned you know the Road to the Cup and some of the other great things that you've done in and around the NHL. I mean, the shots you get, the places you take us is absolutely outstanding. Stuff that, you know, we never would have had access to. We never would have had an understanding of what's going on in the locker rooms and with teams. Talk about what it's like being a part of that and getting that sort of access from all the different teams that you've worked
with. Well, you know, it's 10 years now. It started way back in 2010 when I was still at HBO. John Collins, Gary Bettman, and I came up with the formula of doing 4 shows then, leading up to and including the Road to the Winter Classic itself. So, you know, the initial series was pretty mind-boggling. You really have to tribute Gary Bettman, who stood up in front of all the general managers and owners and said, look, we're going to allow these people to come in and really show off our sport. And so we got access to everything. And this was the first time that people were given access during the regular season. You know, we had done Hard Knocks at HBO, and I had done those boxing series with the individual fighters for 24/7. But we had never done a team sport during the regular season. The NHL and Gary Bettman were bold enough to do it. And we ended up, you know, having this 10-year run at this point. So it's been very exciting. I mean, look, you know, we tell them up front we want to be flies on the wall. We don't want to get in your way as you prepare. But we want to be everywhere. We want to be in the locker rooms. We want to be in coaches' meetings. We want to be in the hotels with you guys. We want to be at your homes. We want to see how you interact with your families, you know, because people really like to know what it's like to be a professional athlete. And this gives them a first row seat.
And Ross, you mentioned a moment ago the 24/7s that you've done with several different boxing events. And we had the great fortune to talk to Jerry Cooney a couple of weeks ago and wanted to get your thoughts on some of the those types of events that you've done and really where you think the state of boxing is right now.
First of all, Jerry was one of the great people in the history of sport. I can still remember in like 1981, him hoisting me on his shoulders, carrying me around up at the Concord. He was training for a fight and I was doing a profile of him. Might have been for the Holmes fight for all I remember, but you know, boxing has gone through some ups and downs over 100 years. And now either one or two things are happening. Either it's becoming a very niche sport or the next Tyson, Ali, Sugar Ray Leonard, Oscar De La Hoya is going to appear out from nowhere and capture everyone's imagination. But right now, you know, it's having trouble, commandeering big stars. You know, Pacquiao's at the end of his career, obviously Floyd has retired. And I think, you know, Canelo Alvarez is not a household name as you walk down the street among average sports fans. I always said that, you know, we kept it aloft for many, many years at HBO, obviously. I got there in 1978 and watched it, you know, through the 80s when we had everybody, Hagler, Leonard, Duran, and Hearns, and we had Holmes, and we had, you know, you mentioned Jerry Cooney. We had Mike Tyson appear in 1984, and all of a sudden, it was the golden era. In the 90s, we had Bowen Holyfield and Oscar De La Hoya and Roy Jones, so it continued. And then Mayweather appeared, and we had some of those unbelievable fights in the 2000s when I was president of HBO Sports. When I left, you know, things have now changed. I hooked up with Showtime, brought Mayweather over to Showtime with Steven Espinoza, and the sport flourished for a little while with Mayweather at the helm, but now since he retired, no one's really claimed that mantle.
Bob, questions for Ross?
Yeah, Ross, it's great to speak with you again. I'll get back to boxing in just a minute, but we've talked in the past about your days at Brown University, and when you graduated, Ross, in the late 70s, did you think you'd be doing what you've been doing all these years, or what were your plans at that time?
Well, it's funny, because I grew up with Frank Gifford's son, Kyle. We played football from third grade through high school. We were best friends, and so Frank Gifford exposed me to ABC Sports in its heyday in the 70s, and after that experience, I decided in my junior year, my mom, of course, wanted me to be a lawyer, but I didn't want much part of that. And I knew after my junior year that I wanted sports television. And Frank gave me some entree and Kyle to sports TV through ABC Sports. And we even hooked up with CBS Sports for golf tournaments that summer. And once I was exposed to it, I felt like I was a kid in Disneyland. And you know, I really was attracted to it. My whole life, I was a huge sports fan and really a television sports fan. You know, I was the kind of strange kid who would start to cry when someone was winning a gold medal or, you know, a championship game or something. I was even fortunate enough to go to Super Bowl III as a lifelong Jet fan. So, you know, I had special moments and I don't know, it just became part of my life, and it was in my bloodstream. So at Brown, that's when I made the decision and graduated in 77, so immediately hooked up for about 8 months with ABC Sports, and then was looking for a staff job because I couldn't get a staff job there, even though Frank probably tried. And I found this little company called HBO, and it had about 500,000 subscribers. And I just rode the wave. I mean, I remember my dad, he died in 1982, but in 1978, when I got to HBO, he goes, you know, that cable, he wasn't even in television, but he goes, that cable television is going to be big. And lo and behold, it became pretty big.
And Ross, back to boxing for a minute. I remember the glory days too. I was a couple years behind you in college, but here I am in as a student in New York City, and we had a couple fanatics in our dormitory. We would have the latest edition of Ring magazine, and you know the centerfold. We just took out the ring ratings. We plastered it all over our doors, and we almost knew Ross, the champion in each division. And it was NBC Sports World, and we were watching it constantly and went to closed circuit fights, et cetera. And it really was something how it's gone up and, to me, a lot down. I mean, I'm just not the fan I used to be. But
no.
How much do you give credit and maybe the opposite of that to a guy like Don King? What has he meant to boxing, and what did he do to maybe not have it the way it once was?
Well, I mean, Don certainly did a lot for the sport. I mean, he was a heck of a promoter, and had some of the biggest fighters in the world. You know, and he was the definition of a promoter in that he really did get a good, he had a knack for getting the word out in the public, and he was bigger than life. So I credit him a lot with bringing the, you know, boxing game to the forefront in people's minds. If you think about what he did with Ali and what he did with Tyson and many, many others. So I'm not going to discredit him. I think the business itself shot itself in the foot in a lot of ways. I used to bemoan when we would do these pay-per-view events at HBO with about 200,000 subscribers paying, you know, $70 or 60 or $50 a month in those days for these pay-per-view events. And I couldn't stand it because I knew that if we didn't have live HBO big fights like we did in the 80s with Tyson or Holmes or Leonard or, you know, Hearns or whoever, that the sport was going in the wrong direction. And the greed of promoters and managers was getting the best of the game itself. And I think now, you know, for too long a period of time, too few people were tuning in and actually seeing the biggest events in the sport. And that hurt it badly, particularly in the last 10 years. And we continue, you know, to see it kind of in a niche environment, whether it's DAZN or on pay-per-view. The one company that's continuing to fight, though, is the company I'm consulting with. Showtime and Steven Espinoza continue to fight the battle and, you know, get as many big fights as possible on the network.
Ross, you mentioned a moment ago events and things that kind of move you to tears. And for me, it's always been the last part of the USA hockey team beating what was then the Soviet Union, the Al Michaels call that, you know, do you believe in miracles? And I know you did the Do You Believe in Miracles documentary about that team. And that's something that is, I think, for folks, you know, our age, my age, is the most significant sporting event of the 20th century. What was it like putting that thing together?
Well, not only that, you know, first of all, that was a documentary that I had to make because I was just at HBO for a couple years and I was actually traveling out to LA and the pilot came on the loudspeaker and was giving us updates period by period of the USSR game. And so when he announced that the U.S. had won 4-3, the entire plane, you know, stood up and cheered and I'd never seen anything like it, nor will I ever see anything like it again. And I knew at that moment that this wasn't a hockey game. So fast forward 20 years later and I was at HBO and I had brought it up as an idea to my staff, and I said, I really want to do this docu. They all agreed that it would be an outstanding, phenomenal docu to do. No one had really ever done it definitively. And so we set out to do it. And while I started making the docu, I thought to myself, you know, this is a movie, and we ought to make a movie. So I gave HBO the first look. They didn't want it. And I, in my contract in the mid-90s, I had written in that if they didn't want a film, I could take it out. And so I actually went to Disney and presented Herb Brooks's rights to them and said, look, I have the rights to this. Do you want to make the movie? And they said, sure. And within 30 seconds, I had sold the movie. And then I set out, not only did the documentary, but then I turned around and did the film, Miracle. And that was one of the great, you know, moments in my career, to be honest with you, to do both of those. I'll never forget that experience. It was something really special. The 40 times I watched, you know, either the docu or the film, you know, and all the rough cuts, it always brought me to tears at the end. Still does. And it still, as you know, become a cult film. Miracle is watched by millions of people all the time. As, you know, a lot of kids today, if they're on soccer teams or hockey teams, doesn't matter what they're playing, you know, they'll watch that film the night before the big championship game just to get motivated.
Did you get an opportunity to spend time with Herb Brooks?
Yeah, a lot. Yeah. Unfortunately, if you remember, he passed, you know, in that, you know, car accident, or I don't know if he had a heart attack,
right.
But he, that was only 3 weeks before we started filming. And, you know, Kurt Russell had met him and spent a little time with him, and we had spent time with him, and I got to know him, and couldn't have been a nicer guy. And the family, you know, came to the premiere in LA and got to spend time with them. His wife and the kids. He had a lot. Yeah, I think he had four kids and their spouses. And, you know, they really thanked me for telling their dad's story. And now it's locked in forever.
Ross, another one of my idols that I imagine you got to spend a lot of time with is Jack Nicklaus.
Yeah,
a lot of things for
I
the
sure
USTA
did.
With for him. What was it like getting to spend some time with him?
Well, I'll give you one memory I'll never forget. So I did the documentary about the 1962 U.S. Open where Arnold Palmer was almost hosting it at Oakmont, just down the road from La Trobe where he grew up. And Nicklaus came in and won his first major tournament, his first tournament period at Oakmont that year, beating Arnold Palmer in a playoff. So all these years later, I did the documentary for the USGA and also for Golf Channel. And I can't remember if it was on Fox or I don't know, but it appeared somewhere. And so one, we had the idea to bring the two of them together. Arnold, we interviewed each one separately, but one day we brought them to Oakmont together. Arnold was 83 and Jack was 73. And they flew in on their helicopter and we, you know, I had them walking all over the course, reminiscing about their event many, many years ago and, even set up shots where we had, you know, photos of the two of them as kids and then dissolved to them all these years later. And spending the day with the two of them was, I can't even describe how chilling it was. Even got to at lunch. You know, order an Arnold Palmer and watch Jack Nicklaus order an Arnold Palmer in front of Arnold Palmer. That was fun. But they couldn't have been nicer. God, did they love each other. Jack just, they loved each other. You know, people always questioned that they were rivals and this and that. Never the case. And boy, was Jack sweet and kind to Arnold because he was, you know, getting on in years at that point. But man, he was loving to him.
Bob, one more for Ross before we let him go?
Yeah, sure, Ross. We've talked also in the past about your friendship with Bob Costas and your working with him and et cetera. And to me, he remains at the very top of the broadcasting profession as far as his eloquence. Talk about a guy that was born to be a broadcaster, just his vocab, delivery, et cetera, et cetera. Just maybe remind our listeners, Ross, about what made him so great, and do you still talk to him, et cetera?
All the time, yeah. We're going to work together again. I don't know where and when, but we'll work together again, doing the shows, the kinds of shows that we were doing at HBO and then went on to do at NBC. The thing about Bob that's so intriguing is that he does everything. I mean, he may be the greatest interviewer I've ever seen in broadcasting, where he can sit someone down and just go as deep as anyone I know and asking all the questions that you want as a viewer asked and just draw stuff out. Tough questions, but he does it in such an amenable way that the person sitting across from him, you know, doesn't realize that he's being grilled. You know, I think of Bud Selig, who Bob would constantly be interviewing, and they were really brutal questions, right on the nose. And then, you know, Bud would get up, shake his hand as if he was sitting with his best friend. It was an uncanny ability. And then, of course, the way he calls a baseball game, you know, he idolized Vin Scully, and he may be the second best play-by-play man in baseball history to Vin Scully. So, you know, no one is as well-rounded. And as a host, I mean, you've seen him as a host all these years. So he does it all. And that's what's so uncanny about him. But, you know, one of the greatest minds I've ever seen, and you're right, it's as if the camera doesn't exist when he's talking to you. It's just really staggering. And I don't know if I've ever seen him do a second or third take, you know, when we put something on tape. He just is a magician.
Ross, before we let you go, remind our listeners how they can stay up to date with all the great things you're doing, whether it's on your website or it's over social media.
We got the website, rossgreenbergproductions.com, so check that out. You can look back through Memories Lane. You know, it goes back 10 years from Ross Greenberg Productions. And then, of course, and it has, you know, some stuff from yesteryear. But, you know, the other way to just catch some stuff is to know that Road to the Winter Classic's third episode, which will be 1 hour on Monday night on NBCSN. Sports Network, and, you know, just read up. I mean, I'll try to get the word out on programs like this and hopefully get some PR people to make sure you know when something's coming up to get the word out.
Well, Ross, we're always here for you, so anytime you've got something you need to get the word out on, we're here to have you on and love to spread that word. Thank you so much.
You guys aren't sick of me,
huh?
After four times,
no.
You're not sick of me. Okay. Okay.
Just starting.
Not at all.
All right. Well, I got a lot more stories where those came from.
Oh, excellent.
We got a place for you to tell them. So don't ever.
You got
that.
It. You got
Ross,
it.
Thank you so much for your time. Happy New Year. We look
Thanks.
Forward to catching up with you
Happy
again.
Happy New Year.
Take care, Ross. Bye bye.
Happy New Year. Bye bye.
That's the great Ross Greenberg. Bob, it doesn't get any better than that, my friend.
No, as far as giants in the industry, Chris, he's right at the top. And again, people that don't go back to the 80s to remember HBO in its prime and some of the things that were done and the excitement that was generated, it all had Ross Greenberg's print on it. So that's media royalty right there, Chris. And we're honored that he's been on a few times and hope to have him on a lot more.
Yes, we do. All right, we've got one of the great new college coaches hanging on the line, Don Beebe. We're going to get to Don right on the other side of this World Cook Station break.